From downtown, this is Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam, and you're listening to Nintendo Main Podcast. Boom shakalaka!
This week on Nintendo Main, I've played Princess Peach Showtime. Plus, we're finally getting F-Zero Maximum Velocity on Nintendo Switch Online.
I'm back to playing Ori again.
Welcome to Nintendo Main Podcast, episode 415, your place to hear Nintendo fans talk about Nintendo first-party games and other news and all that. And we are your hosts. I'm Trey. Busting darkly sour grapes makes me good feel. Johnson.
I'm John. Will of continuing a game that I kind of dropped off on a long time ago dinner.
Will of continuation. And Jeremy is out on the big trip. So
I'm an adventure.
He won't be here for this week and next week. So it's just us two. We're recording early. So
it's the AM edition.
It's the AM edition. We'll see how that goes.
We should do like the Today Show version of Nintendo Main. We should just focus on lighthearted stories and gaming.
Morning news is pretty awful, so I mean, I'm trying to steer away from that. If you've ever watched like morning local news or whatever, it's pretty bad. I've stayed at a lot of hotels lately, and it always is like super cringe, like any of that fucking morning news garbage. We'll try to stay away from that. But yeah, anyway, we're here. Let's start off the show as we normally do and talk about games that we got and games that we've been playing. I did end up getting Princess Peach Showtime. Last week I said I was on the fence about it, but one of the main reasons I got it was because it was made by the same director who did the Legend of Mystical Ninja game for Nintendo 64, the original one, the first one. So that's what really swayed me on it, because Etsunobu Ibisu was the director, and I guess this is the first game he's fully directed since that 64 game. I know he's worked on a bunch of shit since then, but okay, as a full-on director, which is pretty cool. I was a huge fan of that Mystical Ninja 64 game. I played a lot of it in high school, and it's interesting because, you know, this game has so many like stage themes, and that game did too. There was a lot of stage stuff in there. There's even a whole song at the end of the game when you fight the final boss where he sings about how his life is a stage, and there's this whole like musical performance. That's another thing I loved about the Mystical Ninja game is there's many musical numbers in there, and they're all just like, you know, they're straight up anime stuff. There's an anime intro. You know, you get like an intro for the robot whenever you play as the robot, and you know, it was a lot of fun, and it had a great soundtrack too. And there's parts of this game that remind me of that, so that's cool. I would love to see any Mystical Ninja game show up on Nintendo Switch Online, but I wouldn't hold your breath on that one. I don't think we've had a single Konami game on there yet, right? Not even like the Super Nintendo Mystical Ninja, even though it's been on like all of the virtual consoles.
So Castlevania.
Not Castlevania, though. Well, Castlevania on Genesis. That's about the only one that we have. But not Super Nintendo, no NES Castlevanias, nothing on there. So, you know, Konami being Konami, I don't think we'll ever see Mystical Ninja on there, which is a shame because that first game is really good. The second one's good, too. I would love to see a collection of them. I was always so pissed about Goemon's Great Adventure. That's the second one on 64. They got rid of all the musical numbers because they thought that us Americans don't like that. So I would like to see a newly released version that put them back in there, because
it wasn't edgy enough for the late 90s.
I was sad that they took them out. They took out all the fun musical numbers. But there,
there actually is the Castlevania Game Boy too on the. Game Boy.
Oh, there's the Game Boy one. Yeah, I forgot. There's the Game Boy game. So we have that. So we have two Konami games, Castlevania on Game Boy and Bloodlines. That's what we have.
I feel like they want to hold all their stuff for their collections, because they do have a number of collections. That's probably why we haven't seen so much on the NSO.
Yeah, but we're never going to see a Mystical Ninja collection. I don't think they care at all about it, which is a shame, because those probably games are not really good. It would be great if they were to release, because there's like four or five Super Famicom ones that didn't, that didn't come out here. I actually bought a couple of them when I was in Japan, and they're pretty easy to play because they're like side scrollers, and and they look really good, the Super Famicom ones. And I would have loved to see like a collection of those, even if they weren't translated. They're still fun as hell to play. I used to play them on an emulator when I was in college, just because they're pretty straightforward, so they're pretty easy to get through, even if you don't know Japanese. But yeah, I don't know. It reminds me games.
I wonder if they might put them out on a Japanese-only collection, like since it's not translated. I imagine they're still popular over there, right?
I mean, if they put it on the Japanese NSO, that'd be great, like I said, because they're still playable. They're pretty playable without knowing. And it would be great for people to play the Super Famicom one. I would be sad if the 64 ones got on there and they didn't come out here, because I know they're translated. But especially that first one was a lot of fun. And the second one was more side scrolling and two player, and we had a lot of fun with that in college too. So, if you have
I see in your background right now, you have both the Ninja Gaiden and Princess Peach Showtime playing.
I do. I do. I made sure to get that Mystical Ninja going back there, because that was one of my favorite games. This was pre Ocarina of Time, before Ocarina of Time. The Legend of Mystical Ninja 64 was pretty cool. You know, that was
before. I remember being really intrigued by that game at the time and really considering getting it, because it did seem like, I don't know, the next sort of Mario 64 quality type of game at that period.
Yeah,
I don't remember why I didn't get it.
I'm sure I showed it to you at some point, because it was like one of my favorite games growing up. And I still want to run through it again sometime. Maybe this will put a fire under my belly to go back and play that game. But aside from that, I actually didn't want to get into the Princess Peach stuff yet. But what was it? All right, so last week I talked about how I got two TVs downstairs. Now I also ordered a HDMI splitter from Amazon for like $20. So now I have my Switch going to both TVs, so I can kind of just like swap whichever one I want a different thing on, or I'll just keep them going to both TVs and all that, which is a fun thing to do. It works great. It was pretty easy to do. It's just a little box that comes with I got the one that has the HDMI attached to it, and you just plug two HDMIs into it and send it to both your TVs, and there you go.
Are you just prepping for when they release the DS on the NSO?
I'm prepping for how I'll, like Jeremy was saying, I'm going to figure out how to put a Virtual Boy games through there, and I'm just going to cross my eyes and it'll make it automatically 3D somehow. That's what I'm going to figure out, something like that. No, it's just a... I don't know. It was just something I wanted to fuck with. I was like, well, what if I could put it on both TVs at once? So, and one of the TVs is a smart TV. So, you know, newer TVs, you can set your Switch up to interact with it. You know, so where if you turn your Switch on and put it in the dock, it'll turn on the TV and it'll automatically go to the thing and all that. Or if you have a Switch controller that can turn on your Switch remotely, it'll turn your TV on and stuff like that. So it has all that fun stuff. But what's kind of annoying is if you're like, well, I'll only watch one TV, and you turn off the smart TV, it also turns off your Switch. So you have to be like, oh, fuck. So that's fun to try to juggle both of those. But yeah, whatever. I'm still using both of those. It's pretty cool. But last week after we recorded, I was a little tipsy, so I was like, hey, let's buy some stuff online. So I bought, it was Vampire Survivors DLC, so it's not that much. But I bought the Among Us Vampire DLC crossover, which is like $1.50 or something like that. It's super cheap, but it seems like so like late to the party, I guess. I mean, I don't know, I haven't played Among Us since we played Among Us whenever it came out to Switch originally. Yeah. So it's been like I was like, wow, this should have, well, I guess Vampire Survivor has only been out for like a year, but on Switch. But anyway, I played the Among Us stuff, and you play as the little guys, and you know, and you get to like do sus stuff or whatever. But it's fun for me because it adds new shit to Vampire Survivors. It's like it's called Adventure Mode, and you get to unlock the different colors of the guys, and there's all the different, there's new weapons that are in there, and there's new enemies and different levels and stuff like that you unlock from leveling up your weapons or whatever. So I fucked around with that for a while. That was fun. I got whatever the other DLC was too, which I haven't really messed with, but that was like a buck too. There was some stuff that was on sale. I bought the I haven't really played around with it, but it was kind of more of like a future thing. But I did buy the season pass for Mortal Kombat 1 because it was like half off, so it was like $20 instead of $40. But that includes like the whatever the new story DLC whenever that comes out. So that was kind of the main thing. I was like, well, I'll just get it now, and then you know all this shit later, I'll get it. But I got all the bonus characters also. So whenever I boot it up, I can play as a Peacemaker or Omni-Man or any of those people that are on there. So I have that, but I haven't fucked around with it yet. But the one thing that I've been playing aside from Princess Peach Showtime is the Ghostbusters game on the Switch. I know you have this one too. I don't know how far you got. Yeah. I don't know how far you got into it, but I beat it. I beat it last night. I was kind of determined to get through it, and it's not that long. It's like it says according to my Switch time, it says that I put 10 hours into it. But from what I've seen on how long to beat, it's like 7 or 8 hours, something like that. I think it has around that many levels. So I guess it kind of depends on how long you get stuck on it. And there can be like some kind of annoying stuff in there, which kind of turned me off originally, because there's some long battles that you go through and their checkpoints aren't as generous as they should be, I guess. But Jess and I, we went to go see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire at Alamo Drafthouse last week.
Yeah, it
was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I know it's not been reviewed well, but I don't care. I thought it was a great movie. but we had a good time. At Alamo, they have specific Ghostbuster-themed cocktails. So we had the Ecto Boozer, and the other one's like a protoplasm something or other. But if anybody isn't familiar...
Did they use actual Ecto Cooler in there?
I mean, no. They use fruit juices, but it was really tasty. I liked it a lot. But for anybody who's not familiar, Alamo Drafthouse is a theater chain where you can buy food and get drinks and stuff like that. And people bring you food while you're watching the movie, which sounds really annoying at first. And it is kind of annoying at first, but you get used to it after a while. And I go there because it has they always have like a little like segment at the beginning telling everybody to shut the fuck up. And most of the people that are there are people who want to see movies, so you don't have to deal with people recording the first 20 minutes of the movie or anything like that, or you know, or constant chatter. And since we can only really go to movies on the weekends, I'll pay extra to go to Draft House to not have to deal with assholes. So that's my whole thing. But so we watched it. We really enjoyed it. We got a pint glass with Slimer on there. I always wanted one of those pint glasses. They have all these different pint glasses for different movies, and I always didn't do it until too late, and they were all sold out. But I planned this way ahead of time. I'm on the mailing list. They emailed me right when the tickets came out, and I was like, I'm fucking going to Ghostbusters. So we did. We had a good time. But we've been watching, we watched all the movies. We watched 1 and 2 again. We watched, we watched Afterlife before we went to go see Frozen Empire and all that, so it could like refresh us on the movie. And we watched the female Ghostbusters movie again as well. So I've been in this like Ghostbusters mood. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and I'm going to play the Ghostbusters game again. And I was like, I was maybe on like the third level or something like that. So I was like, I'll just play from wherever I was. I didn't want to start over again because I thought that would, I don't know, take extra time. So it just took me a while to figure out how to play the game again. But I don't know. Once I figured it out, it was pretty fun. It's mostly, it's basically like its own Ghostbusters movie. And you can see the influence of the game on all of the movies. Like every movie has an influence from the game in some way. Like even the female Ghostbusters has some stuff from the game in it. So, it's kind of like, it's like, wow, all right. And also, like, I didn't know this is the last time that Harold Ramis played Egon before he died. So, I mean, it is kind of bittersweet if you miss seeing all four of them together, and they all are on there as their voices and all that. And Janine's on there too, and Peck's on there too, which he was in the movie as well. He became the mayor, so they brought him back. But Bill Murray's brother's in there, like he plays the mayor in the game, and I know like Max Van Sydow's in there too, and he's dead also. So I mean, there's a some good voices in there that have passed. So it's kind of like a little bittersweet, but it was, I had a good time with it. And mostly I just wanted to have the full, have the full cast there again, with Egon. And it's definitely worth playing if you want to.
Yeah.
Relive.
I remember
that.
From what I played of it, which I probably have, I don't know, maybe 3-4 hours into it. I remember feeling like, well, this really does feel like Ghostbusters 3. It felt like a successful video game sequel of the movie.
And there's different versions too. Like I had originally only played the Wii version, which I always thought was the superior version just because it had more options to it. But I guess the levels are kind of different, but you still have the same, You still have the same dialogue. But what was cool about the Wii/PlayStation,
isn't it?
Yeah. The Wii/PlayStation 2/PSP version was made by a different company and they modeled it after the cartoon show instead of the movie. But it actually has some really cool like art style in there and all that. And in the Wii version, you can play as a male or a female. In the PS3 one, you can only play as a male. And the Wii one also had a co-op where you could play through the whole game in co-op within split screen, which is pretty cool. Which is not available on the other version and not available on the remastered version that we have. So. I don't know. There's that version. That was the only one I had played before. I never beat it all the way through. I thought about going through that as well, just because it's not that long. But yeah, it's a cool game. I really wish they would have, when they remastered it, I wish they would have packaged both versions in there. It would have been pretty cool if we had the PS3 360 one and the Wii PS2 one, and you could kind of just like choose whichever one, because they both have their merits. And, you know, that was the time where they did actually, you know, some companies actually put a lot into the Wii version and it ended up being different and sometimes better, you know, like the Force Unleashed games, like those were better on Wii than they were on PlayStation 3, you know, like because they added more to the Wii one through motion control or whatever. So, yeah, it would have been cool to be able to play both of them, but it's still worth playing if you want to play it. If you can only play the Switch version, it's totally worth playing. It's funny. The characters are cool.
Doesn't seem likely that the Wii PS2 version would ever get a re-release, because I don't think those were quite as popular as the PS3 Xbox one. Those kind of like the main feature of that era of Ghostbusters games. I think it'd be cool to re-release them, not only do that, but actually there's enough Ghostbusters games out there. You could do a Ghostbusters collection just the same way as they did the Jurassic Park collection and the Disney collection, even though all those were made from different studios and whatever. I think Sony could put some muscle behind it. You know, Sony, who owns the Ghostbusters franchise, and get their lawyers together and make an actual Ghostbusters collection, despite all these games coming from different eras, different companies. You put that Ghostbusters arcade game in there, you know, the terrible NES Commodore 64 game. Yeah, there's enough about there.
I was looking at Nintendo Life or one of those companies did like a top whatever Ghostbusters games that are on NES. And if they were to ever do a collection, they should put out the Ghostbusters 2 Japanese game that we never saw that was actually developed by HAL Laboratory and Satoru Iwata. So I would love to play that game. Like, apparently it's really, really good. Like, it kind of looks like Pokemon, actually, with a Ghostbuster layer on it. So that would be great to see, because I would love to play that game. But yeah, apparently it didn't come out here, but it's really, really good. I did play Ghostbusters 1 and 2. I played Ghostbusters 1 and 2 on NES when I was a kid. They were terrible. When I was a kid, I was like, I want to get an Atari. I want to get an Atari because, you know, in the comic books I would read, there'd be these big Ghostbusters ads in there for the Atari game. And I just wanted to play a Ghostbusters game. And remember, my cousin was like, no, you don't want to get an Atari. That's crap. You want to get an NES. So I was like, well, what about the Ghostbusters game? He's like, well, that's on NES too. I never actually owned any of the Ghostbusters games, but I was smart enough to not buy them, but I did rent them, and they're both awful.
Yeah.
I remember Ghostbusters 2, you like took Ecto-1 and you jumped over giant holes in New York. That's all I remember about that game. But it was pretty stupid in like a side-scrolling type way. Like, you would jump over giant holes in like in Times Square or whatever. I was like, yeah, this game's dumb.
I remember in Ghostbusters 1, which I owned on the NES, there was a strange focus on making sure you had enough gas for the car. Like, you just be driving along and run out of gas. I'm like, why am I managing gas? I want to fight ghosts.
Yeah. I remember there being, some really annoying, like, money management in there as well, where you have to kind of budget for your ghost equipment or whatever. Yeah, I'm sure they work gas into it, too. And I was just like, yeah, I probably just couldn't wrap my head around it. I remember it, like, kind of looking really shitty. And weren't the proton packs just, like, little dots, like white dots, like next to each other, like when it was that's what your stream looked like. Like, it was very, you know, very rudimentary and all that. But no, yeah, play the game on Switch. There's a like I said, there's stuff in all the movies. Like Like in the female one, like the ley lines where they have the different events happening in different places and they're all on a map, like that's from the game. In Ghostbusters Afterlife, Evo Shandor's in there. Evo Shandor was like the evil architect that like built the building that summoned Zool and all that, or summoned Gozer. Yeah, he's actually the main villain in the game. Yeah, so that's the first time I'm sure maybe they mentioned Evo Shandor in the cartoon, but that was the first time I ever heard of him. Was from the game. And also, like, there's parts in the library that's very similar to what happens in the new movie. So I was like, oh, well, this is all kind of from the game. I'm sure it, you know, set up, because I know Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd did actually write a lot of the stuff from the game. So it kind of set up sort of a pathway for later Ghostbuster movies and all that.
I think the way that it kind of played out was that they were writing Ghostbusters 3, which I think the subtitle was Ghostbusters Go to Hell or something like that. That didn't work out, so they took a bunch of the material that they wrote for that movie and basically made a game from it.
Yeah, I mean, from my understanding, like, Ghostbusters 3 was in development hell forever, and I don't think... I heard that Bill... Well, from what I read, Bill Murray, like, never liked any of the stories, so he never really signed off on anything. And same with the game was in development for a long time, too, before it came around, and... Yeah, we finally got it, but it's fun. It's fun for what it is. You should go back and play it again, even though you have to.
It is my list of games to finish.
You have to teach yourself how to play it again. The main thing that, like I said, the main thing that really turned me off was that some of the checkpoints aren't great, and those bosses can be really long, and you basically have to look. You have to go through like the same dialogue like over and over and over and over again if you're stuck on a boss. Like there was this. Like the library boss, I think, was the worst one. The collector or whatever he's called, because you have to like he has like this giant mask and you have to shoot the slime on his mask to like get rid of all the black slime, and then you have to remove the mask and then you have to fight him. But he can take you out in a couple hits, you know, and you only have a couple of the Ghostbusters with you that you have to revive, otherwise you'll get killed. Like that was like the worst fucking fight that I had through the whole game. Like I was ready to throw my controller a couple times on that one. But once you can get through that. It's a lot easier. I remember when we had, Chris Leeson on the show, you know, mutual friend of ours. You mentioned you were playing the game, and he mentioned the graveyard. The graveyard was really annoying. The graveyard is actually the final level of the game, and I was like, oh God, what's the graveyard? And I was all like, you know, afraid to get to it. And there is a part that apparently is really annoying, but I actually got through it sooner than I thought I would. So it wasn't as annoying as the collector. But anyway, go back and play that game. It looks great. It sounds great. It's fun. I had a good time with it. I just beat it last night. Actually beat it like probably like 3 or 4 hours ago. But yeah, it's a knock one off the list there for beating nice. Games of this year. I really wanted to go back to it, and with the excitement of the new movie and all that, it brought me probably back to Ghostbusters, and I finally beat the game. So hooray. One game that I haven't beat yet, but I probably will in the next day. Is Princess Peach Showtime. Like I said earlier, it's directed by Itsunobu Ebisu from Mystical Ninja. So I was really excited about it. Yeah, it's if you go from Ghostbusters to Princess Peach, the frame rate is not as good between the two of them. But which is a shame, because Ghostbusters is totally a PS3-ass game. Like, if you played any games of that time, it totally reminds me of those sort of games.
Lots of browns.
Well, yeah, it does. It's not, you know, I've seen browner ones, but yeah, it does kind of have like those same sort of tones. I think a lot of it is just, I think they said it once on Retronauts. It's like a story tube with collectibles. You know, you're just kind of, it's very linear. Like, it's very story focused. You're kind of just going from one point to another, and there's like little collectibles that you find that would give you like trophies and all that, which there was no achievements in the remastered version for Switch, which was annoying. Sometimes they take the trophies and still, like, you know, have them in the menu and be like, oh, here's some stuff you can unlock, even though you don't technically get trophies. So that was kind of a disappointment. But
yeah,
it reminded me of, like, you know, it reminded me of, like, Batman Arkham Asylum. You know, similar thing where you're going, like, from one thing to another and you're finding little Riddler trophies. Like, there's these little trophies that you can find in the levels that show up in the firehouse later. You know, it's very much that PlayStation 3 feel of games, you know. It's like
big set pieces. Yeah, I feel like that era was kind of defined by, hey, we're in HD now, we want to make sure you know that we can do huge cinematic experiences, and that was a little bit to the expense of actual gameplay. But I think by PS4 and all that era. There was a little bit more course correction, and the indies came up and you could focus on gameplay a little bit more.
You do fight the Marshmallow Man in here, so you do get giant set pieces for that.
But I thought that the Princess Peach, as far as the frame rate and all that stuff, I thought that's actually one of the best looking Switch games that I've seen from the demo.
It looks okay. The Princess Peach game, it looks pretty good. It's just that there's some really weird choices in the frame rate. Like sometimes in the cutscenes, like it like kind of will do like the 10 frames per second animation, like in, straight up with the characters. Like I've seen your little star character, do the weird like pause thing that it does when it's farther away. There's just some weird things that they've done in there to kind of like make it smoother or whatever. But if you can look past that, it's pretty cool. The transformations are pretty fun. It's going to vary depending on like what sort of games you're into and that sort of thing. I think my favorite one so far has been the Dashing Thief, because it's basically what if Peach was Batman. Like that's what I get from it. You have your grappling hook. There's actually some levels that remind me a lot of the Batman of the Batman the Animated Series Super Nintendo game, which I played a ton of, Adventures of Batman and Robin. And that's not the Genesis one. It's the better one. This is the one where you actually did crime fighting and detecting. Well, the Genesis one was just a Contra. You were just shooting people with two players, and the Super Nintendo one was more focused on being a detective, and it actually has like some like whatever problem solving stuff. But there's this whole level in that one with a Scarecrow, where Scarecrow's like, he's unleashed like tear gas on everything, and you have to fight like actual civilians, and you can't hurt them because you're Batman, so you have to like knock them out with this with knockout spray or whatever. But there's a part where you're on this giant balloon, and you have to like go all the way around the balloon and then come down and like latch onto it and swing into the front, and then you fight Scarecrow like in the balloon while all this Mode 7 stuff's going around you. It's really, really cool. But there's a part in Princess Peach which is almost exactly the same, where there's a giant balloon that you jump on and you run all the way down, and you do the same thing where you fall off the side and you grapple and you swing through the glass the exact same way as you do in the Batman game. I was like, oh my god, that's the Super Nintendo Batman game. Like somebody played it and they know what this is. Like it was, everything. And there's a part where you're chasing somebody in the background. There's a level like that in the Super Nintendo one where you, also as well, where you're chasing Catwoman and you see her go and you kind of go through all these different like rooftops and then you fight her in an alley at the end. I was like, this is so much like that Batman game. So I guess I could have put that on the TV too. No, I was really excited about that. I was like, oh yeah, this is, and I recorded it. I was going to post it. I was like, oh yeah, there's the fucking, there's the Scarecrow blimp right there.
One of the tangential news articles that came out this week was from the GDC. Someone from Nintendo revealed that there was like 1,000 wonder effects from Super Mario Wonder that they didn't use, and they just kind of went through all the ideas they set aside. And being that these two games came out pretty close from one another, I would almost bet that there was some interchanged ideas between them. Just because there's a similar concept with both characters, morphing and changing and doing fantastical different things. I would almost bet that some things they came up with for Wonder were like, nah, that feels more like Super or Princess Peach Showtime, and vice versa. I bet they came up with some stuff for Princess Peach that they decided to shuffle over to Mario Wonder. I don't know if the two teams were the same, but certainly if they're both Nintendo games and there's some interchangeability between them.
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably not, because they are completely different teams. Like Mario Wonder was developed in house, and this was developed by Goodfield, the people who do the Mystical Ninja games. So it actually wasn't made by Nintendo directly. I mean, maybe they sent some notes about it, but it wasn't really, I think this game feels more like Mystical Ninja than it does Mario Wonder, and Mystical Ninja came out in like 1993 or something like that. So I mean, it's got roots from games that happened way, way, way before Mario Wonder did. So I mean, that's me playing it. Like I said, it feels like Goemon more than any of the Mario games, especially the ninja stuff. Especially when you get to Ninja Peach, it 100% feels like it could have been in a Goemon game. If you would have switched Peach with Goemon, you wouldn't know the difference, really. So which I mean, I guess it would probably be harder on the Goemon side, but still, that's kind of what I got from it. But but apart from that, like, I do really like the way the levels are set up, like a play and all that. Like when you like when you're playing, it's like Cowgirl Peach, and like when stuff is on fire, there's like, you know, it's just like a cardboard fire drawing. You know, it's not like
cardboard
moving
flames,
and then it kind of has like gas going past it, and you know, or like when you're on the horse, you can see like the puppet strings like moving the horse and all that. Like there's all these like really cool details that make you feel like you're on a stage and all that, and that's really cool to be like, oh yeah, look at that. And like the ninja, I thought maybe you'd like the ninja stuff because I'm sure it feels like a dumbed down version of Hitman, because a lot of it is like sneaking around. Mm-hmm. and when you walk up to a wall, you hold like this towel in front of you, and it like changes to whatever color the wall is, and that's pretty funny. Or like when you get in the grass, you have this little cardboard leaf that you hold in front of your face, and people just can't tell that you're there or whatever. It's just like kind of jokes like that. Like that 100% feels like it would be in a Mystical Ninja game, like all of that stuff. So it's you know, it's got its funny parts and all that. But as far
it seems to have a lot of personality.
Yeah, it definitely does. But as far as difficulty, like Yoshi's Crafted World, Woolly World, any Kirby game are like probably twice as hard as this game, I think. I mean, they're much
so this one's easy breezy.
It's easy breezy, but I think that, I mean, yeah. I'm just saying, all the people who give Kirby shit, Kirby games are way harder than this game. I mean, I actually stopped playing Kirby's Forgotten Land because it got way too hard. Well, the second, if you play it after the credits, it's hard as fuck. So, and even before that, like a lot of Kirby games are much more complicated than this. Like each transformation is its own character that you play as that has different moves. They've been doing that since the Super Nintendo one. It's basically like, you know, early Smash Brothers was a bunch of the transformations that Kirby did because they had the same control style, and that's where a lot of all of that came from. But aside from that, I mean, it's pretty, I don't know, it's pretty interesting to play through. I don't know if I would fully recommend it for like $60. Like I got it for I got it with a Nintendo voucher for $50. I would say if you could find a physical version on sale for like $30, it'd probably be more in your like area for that. You know, I don't see you paying $60 for this one, especially since it's probably about as long as the Ghostbusters game, maybe less. From what I've heard, it's around like six or seven hours.
I'll wait till it goes to the traditional sale price of $41.99.
Yeah,
and I'll get the physical at that time.
I was gonna say, I mean, that's digital. You might be able to find it for less. Like I got Fire Emblem Engage for $30, and that's a Nintendo first party, you know, title. So you know, on the physical front, you might be able to get it less. Yeah, digitally, it's never going to go less than $40, but you might be able to get it through. I mean, I did see it on sale on like QVC for like $45 already. You know, like you might be able to catch deals and stuff like that if you look out for it. I'm sure, I'm sure way in the future, Black Friday, you'll be able to get it for $30 or something like that. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, every once in a while, you do need a kind of lighthearted game. So maybe when I'm in one of those moods, I'll pick it up if it happens to be on sale.
It was a good palate cleanser against Ghostbusters, I guess, because some of those bosses were really annoyingly hard. And I guess what was I playing before this? So the last thing I beat was Star Wars Battlefront 2, and there's some levels in that was really, really annoyingly hard, you know, with time limits and all that and blah, blah, blah. So it is a good like palate cleanser in that way.
Also, you know, I don't want to call it a kid's game, but it seems to be a game that does appeal to everybody. But sometimes you do just need something there's value in having a game that is simpler, but also of a high quality, something that you can, you know, give to your children or niece or nephew and, you know, watch them have a good time with it. I've been seeing a lot of stuff along those lines of like, there's a Polygon article says, What was the headline that Polygon? It was like something like Princess Peach is the game that I wish I had as a young girl. You know, there's a lot of value in that too, and games like that, games that you can play with your kids that you know that they are of a certain quality that appeal to everybody, but that maybe they are a little bit, there's a little bit less of a challenge to entry that a kid can play, but you can actually know that you're not giving them just a garbage game, that it's actually something of quality. So that's cool. I'm glad that people are enjoying it with their families and or without their families, just as a good game in and of itself.
And I mean, it is, like I said, it is pretty easy to go from like point A to point B in the game, but there is some stuff that can be difficult. Like if you want to collect all of those like sparkle gems or whatever they are, like those things are hidden really, really well. Like I was, you know, I found all of them in like the sword fighter level, and I was like, oh, I'll try to find all of them after that. No way. Like some of these are really fucking hard. Actually, especially the patisserie peach stuff. Because the ones in the cooking one, you're actually graded on like how much you make and how quick you are. And some of them are really hard. Like I actually tried going through one level multiple times and I still could not get the fucking sparkle gems. Because you have to get like 100% on the cooking minigames, and the patisserie stuff is basically like feels like Mario Party games, like mixed into the game. So some of them are kinda hard to do. And they really expect you to do really, really well, and you won't get all the sparkle gems if you don't do 100%. So, I mean, there is some stuff that if you want 100% it, it's going to take some time. And I don't know if I have the patience to try to get all of them, but we'll see what happens after I beat it, if I want to go back and do it or not. But maybe a couple of them. Like I've been kind of having more fun with the more action-y type levels, I guess. You know, as like simple as they are, it's still pretty fun to. I think like last week I said, like the sword peach basically feels like a dumbed down ease, you know, very, very dumbed down ease, where like you know, it has like witch time, but it's only one button. You know, you basically either hit punch or attack when they're about to attack you. And then it does the little like ghost thing where you know, where you move behind them or whatever. And you basically have to figure out which one to do at whatever time. And that's how you fight the boss. But there are some really interesting bosses in there. Like I fought this giant snake thing. Where you like basically have to kind of cover, and if the snake sees you, the snake rewinds time and you go back to where you were before it saw you. So there's all this like really, really cool stuff that I've never really seen in other games. And this one, because the way it's set up is if there's like levels. So you're in this like building, and every time you get to a different level, you unlock new like little stages and stuff like that you do. But once you beat all the stages, there's a boss that you fight in the middle, and the boss that you fight, you don't use any of the outfits. So you play it as regular Peach. So this was like a regular Peach boss, and you basically kind of had to hide from the snake thing, and you had to like flash light at it to like knock it out so you could get to the next thing. But yeah, if it saw you, it rewinds you back to where you were, but it'll also take your life away. And I did die a couple times doing that. So I mean, I've died playing the game. I mean, I died playing the demo, you know, like I died in the sword level the first time I played it. So I mean, it's, you know, you'll die. It's very much like Super Mario, what is it? It's like Super Mario Odyssey, where you die, you lose a couple coins, and then you come back, you know, like there's no,
yep.
You know, I don't know if you can get a game. I don't know if you can get a game over or not. Maybe if you run out of coins, but I have you'll get a good like 200, 300 coins per level, depending. And so you'll have like your regular first level with each outfit, where you start off as regular Peach and you have to find the outfit, and then you play the rest of the game with the outfit. All of these levels, the original ones, those are the longest ones. There's 10 sparkle gems per those, and there's 10. What is there? 10 different transformation outfits. And there's 3 different levels for every transformation outfit. So there's like 30 levels total, I guess, plus 4 or 5 bosses that you play without the outfits. So that's about how it works. So you do the first one where you find the outfit, and then you do a second one, which maybe has half the sparkle sprites or whatever, the sparkle gems. And then you unlock this level in the basement, where you go and you actually unlock the actor that is wearing the costume that you're wearing or whatever. So you go and you unlock that person, and that's the third level, and that's like the hardest one or whatever. But I guess I heard there's like a hard mode that you unlock where you can like go through and try to not get hit and all that, and that might be fun. I might fuck around with that for a while. But it kind of reminds me like a really, really early, like, you know, it kind of reminds me of like Luigi's Mansion 1, you know, on GameCube, which Luigi's Mansion 1 was a really easy game. Super breezy. I think we beat it. I think we beat it in like a day. It's really, really short. Yeah. Like me and Jeremy used to call it Luigi's Crawl Space because it was like so short, you know, because it was like, yeah, we beat it in like a few hours, but it had a lot of like really cool details to it, and it looked great. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of that. Like this is hopefully maybe this
character.
Maybe this is the beginning of a series of Peach Showtime games, and maybe the next one will be more complicated on that. Or even going back to, like, you know, the first Kirby game that was really, really easy, and then Kirby 2 was like, no, fuck you. And they made it actually way harder, because I played it on NSO. But, you know, like with that sort of thing, where they'll just build on it after this.
in a similar way when Luigi's Mansion came around. Luigi's character really wasn't well defined. He was just Green Mario, kind of. And Peach, you know, along the same lines, you know, has been, you know, the damsel in distress. You know, some hints of character here and there, but this game is, aside from the movie, an effort to really actually draw out her character a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess, well, I mean, you got some personality from Peach in like Mario RPG and like Paper Mario and stuff like that. But yeah, this definitely, you know, makes her feel like it does. She does feel like a, you know, like a Mario sized character and all that, even though it's, I think Jeremy mentioned this from the demo. It does. You know, she's a silent protagonist. She doesn't really say anything except for when you start some level, she's like showtime, you know, or like whatever, you know? So it's very much like you're a silent protagonist and all this stuff is happening around you. But I like that it's kind of apart from all the, you know, they made like new characters, like there's a new villain, you know, that we've never seen before. She's not like fighting Bowser again or anything like that, you know, which you kind of, it's kind of like what, well, I guess Luigi's Mansion, you had the booze and then there was that Bowser, the boo in the Bowser suit and all that. But it does kind of remind me of Luigi's Mansion. And in that, you know, in that way, it makes me excited to see what they'll do. Hopefully they'll do another one, because Luigi's Mansion 3 was like one of the best games on Switch. So, I mean, yeah. Maybe Princess Peach Showtime for Switch 2 will be like, or Princess Peach Showtime 3 will be amazing on Switch 2 or something like that. I don't know. So hopefully they make more of them. It kind of reminded me of the, of like Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker 2, like kind of that sort of, cause that's sort of a breezy game, but it's also really hard at times. So I don't know. I'm not disappointed with my purchase. Like I said, I wasn't really sure about it, but when I started playing those first couple levels, I was like, oh no, this is worth it. Like, it's definitely an enjoyable experience and all that. So
I'll probably get it at some point.
So there you go. But I think that's good for my Princess Peach stuff. I know you played a couple things. Well, go ahead. Yeah, talk about whatever you're going to talk about.
Yeah, on my end, the big thing that I did this week was I went back to Ori and the Will of the Wisps. I was just in the mood for a Metroidvania again. And so I went back in my catalog, and the first one that jumped out was I needed to beat Ori and the Will of the Wisps. I was 59% of the way through. It'll show you exactly when you're at the start menu how far you are into the game. What happened was, why I stopped playing was there was a time trial, which I found particularly difficult. There's a couple of like seven or eight time trials throughout the game where you'll find there's like an obstacle course that you have to get through, and it's a test of your mastery of the controls, and you race against a ghost to try and beat the ghost to the end of the challenge. This one was particularly difficult. And so at that time, I just kind of put the game aside, and I forget whatever game came along, and that's, you know, that's how I stopped playing. But let me tell you, I think that a time trial challenge of your mastery of the controls is probably the worst place that you could possibly quit a game, because I went back over the last year and a half and tried to restart this game a couple of times, but naturally, you just forget the controls after a couple of months. So you're faced with this like thing that you found was challenging at the time when you did have a control over the game. And you did know the controls, and now I was just completely lost. So I tried a couple of times, and I just never got back into it because it was just too challenging. But finally, now, you know, I'm staying at my sister's house this week, which is where I was when I played through the first Ori game and through half of the Will of the Wisps. And so I think I was just kind of primed to like get back into it because I'm back in the environment where I was playing the game. I sat through and probably took about half an hour, and I finally beat that time trial challenge. And then about, you know, 15 minutes playing after that, I was like completely back in. I was like, why did I ever stop playing this game? It's such an amazing, it maybe is one of the most fluid control games that I've experienced in such a game, in a platformer, where you just feel it feels almost like a blend between a Metroid game and the best Tony Hawk games, where you just feel like when you sit and think about it for a minute, the challenge of getting through an entire map from one end of the map to the other, such as you do with a Metroidvania, and throwing in a Tony Hawk style control scheme where you're just like zipping and climbing up the walls and doing flips and all this kind of stuff. It's just like a perfect marriage. It just, it does really give me to a state of like video game zen when I'm really into it. Cause you just, you feel like a ninja or something, just going through the entire Metroidvania map. And by the way, I'm also remembering now Arzette kind of primed the pumps too. Cause Arzette was like I said, on the last show, like a Metroidvania light. So I was in the mood for Metroidvania again. And I went back to Ori. That, Trey, I think you would really like the Ori games, given that you like Metroidvania. You like Metroid a lot.
I do. I mean, there's a lot of Metroidvanias out there. I'm sure it's better than most of the ones that are on there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm sure I'll try it at some point. I was kind of thinking about getting Arzette for a second there. I did get the soundtrack, and the soundtrack was really good because I used it for last week's episode. But
I noticed that you put a couple of songs there. I totally forgot to mention how good the soundtrack is. The soundtrack of Arzette is really cool.
The soundtrack was really swaying me, and I was like, oh, maybe I should buy that game. But I was like, oh, no, but I got all this other stuff to play.
And there's demos from both the Ori games, so if you're curious about it, give it a try. I think it's just, it's real satisfying. It's like a mix between Metroidvania and Tony Hawk for the controls, and the second one, the Will of the Wisps, throws in a lot more Zelda. Like, there's a lot more focus on the side quests and the things that I like so much about Zelda, like the interesting characters, and then throw all that through a Studio Ghibli kind of Disney filter for the animation and the quality of the animation, and it's a 10 out of 10 for me. I love this game, and so I'm not quitting. I'm here at my sister's house, dog sitting for the next couple of days, and I'm going to beat this game before I go home. Yeah, it's a fantastic game.
Has your nephew played the demo of Princess Peach Showtime? Speaking of sister stuff.
Yes. Yeah, and it was funny because
I know it's not a great demo because it only just gives you those like couple things, you know. They should have just given you that whole first floor, I think, or maybe they thought that was too much of it, but I don't know.
That's a good demo, but so I had the game. He actually found it on my. This was one of the last games that I played. He turned on my Switch and he said, "Uncle John, you had the Princess Peach game? Isn't that for girls?" I said, "That's for whoever wants to play it." You know, I said, "It's actually a really good game. You want to try it?" He said, "No, I don't want to try that game. It's for girls," something along those lines. And so a while later, we were eating dinner, whatever. I told him, "Hey, you know, I didn't tell you, but I got a new game that I think you would really like." He said, "Yeah." Whenever I tell him I got a new game, he's like all excited and he wants to try it.
Yeah,
I got a new game that I think you would really like, but I need you to close your eyes and don't. It's a surprise. Close your eyes, and I'll hand you the controller, and you start playing. So he closed his eyes, and I went and I selected Princess Peach, and he got through the cutscene, whatever, and just to the point where the game had started, handed him the controller. And after getting him all excited, he's like, "It's Princess Peach." I said, "Yep, I think you would really like this game because it feels like Kirby, which you love." And once I kind of told him that it was sort of like a Kirby game, he was willing to give it a try. And within 5 minutes, he really enjoyed the game. And I think he wants the game now.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I don't want you don't want that toxic masculinity where he just automatically dismisses it because it's pink or something like that, or think that you
right,
can't play
exactly.
as... I think you can't play as a girl. I thought you were going to throw Arzette at him because you play as a girl in that too and be like, "Hey."
No, which I did have him play that game too, and he had the same kind of reaction. That was last week. He had the same kind of reaction, but he ended up liking it. You know, I don't know how kids get that idea, but it's, you know, it's through TV or other kids at school kind of proliferating that idea. But,
I mean, probably because it says princess in the title, I guess. I don't know, you know, but... It's it definitely shouldn't. I mean, nobody should dismiss anything like that. But I mean, I understand he's a kid, but I'm glad that he liked it, you know, because it is like, it's not supposed to, I would never say it's gender specific or anything like that, but I would never really say anything as that. But, you know, I think anybody can enjoy it, and regardless of age or gender or whatever.
Yeah, and it was, I appreciate the opportunity to show him, you know, that men can play whatever game they want to play, you know,
yeah.
without any of that stuff. Yep. So what else did I do this week? Oh, not movie stuff, but I just not game stuff. I did see a good movie. I saw Late Night with the Devil yesterday.
Oh, damn. You saw that?
That's a good movie.
I want to see that movie.
Yeah, it was good.
Well, you know, I can't. Well, I don't. I met this guy once at a bar in Chicago, David Dismalchin, the actor in it. So I was going to say, I know him. Okay. Not really. I met him at the Hungry Brain one night. We were doing a premiere of another movie that we did, and he was just there. And it was after The Dark Knight, you know, so I recognized him because that was like the only thing he'd been
in. He was in that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was like the first thing he did. He was, I talked to him about The Dark Knight. I said they chose him because they thought his face looked kind of creepy or whatever, because he was one of the cops that was like controlled by the Joker in The Dark Knight and all that. But I ran into him in a bar and we hung out and talked, and I think we took a cab to another bar also. Like, so one night I hung out with this guy and I thought he was really cool. But he's been on the Kevin Smith podcast, and he's been in a million movies. He was in Suicide Squad, the good one, the James Gunn one, and he was in like Ant-Man, and you know, or like he was in like the Flash TV show. He's been in a ton of comic book stuff, and yeah, I was really intrigued by this movie. I heard it was going to show up on Shudder at some point, so we didn't go see it in the theater yet, but I am excited to see it.
So I think that, because I remember seeing this trailer a long time ago, and it didn't say anything about a theatrical release. It just said it was a Shudder movie. I think what happened, my guess is that it just previewed so well that Shudder decided, you know, this is too good to just leave in, you know, leave for exclusively Shudder subscribers. Let's put it in the movie theater. Man, it was a great movie. It was really, really good. I'm not going to say any spoilers or anything, but
I mean, from some Facebook movies, they do premieres for it in theaters even before it premieres on Netflix movies or whatever. You know, they premiere it in theaters.
That's true.
It gets on there. So I figured it's something like that, because I don't think it's available digitally. I think it's only in theaters. But I mean,
it's only in theaters right now, and then of course I'm sure it's going to be a Shudder exclusive. But yeah, it was like, without giving any spoilers, because you should just see this movie, even if you haven't seen the trailer, this is like a movie that's best to just go in blind as you can.
Yeah, I don't want to know anything in particular, because I am definitely super intrigued by this one, and we'll definitely watch it. So no spoilers.
I would liken it to no spoilers, but I would liken it to like a one of those. There's a term for this, and I'm forgetting it right now. One of those like kind of one room thrillers where it just takes place in one place, basically.
Yeah,
they just keep turning up the heat on it.
It's like the studio, probably, right? Like, because it's supposed to be like a late night show. I mean, I have an idea of the premise of it, but I don't know much else than that. It's always best to see movies like that. Actually, same thing with the Ghostbusters movie. I had saw one trailer like months ago, and I completely forgot everything from it. So it was all brand new to me. So that was fun, because I didn't know anything about the movie at all, really, aside from
it's just the better characters, way to see movies.
So I wasn't expecting anything.
I'm at a place right now regarding movie trailers where, like, if it's part of a series, I don't even want to see the trailer. Like Marvel stuff, I don't watch the trailers at all anymore.
Yeah.
I know I want to see them already. What's the point? Why do I want to spoil it? I just want to watch the movie. So, and the movie, like,
It's kind of hard to when you go see a lot of movies, because they play them before the movies, obviously. Especially if it's a Marvel thing, it's always a big event to see like the trailer for the next thing back when people liked Marvel movies still. But it was like, you know, you know, like that sort of thing. But I do know, like, there's people who don't watch trailers like at all, or try not to, you know. So I think it's better that way. You know, it's kind of like that for games for me too. Like if I'm interested in something, I'll just stop watching, you know, videos about it, unless it's like something we have to talk about on here or whatever, or something big, you know.
I mean, if something intrigues me, like what happened with this movie, the trailer popped up on my YouTube, and it sounds like an interesting title. Let me watch that trailer. Cool. I saw one trailer, I was in, and I was like, I never want to see anything else about this movie until I go see it. So that's what I did. I just ignored all the previews and reviews and all that stuff. Went to go see it yesterday with Rich, and man, it was a lot of fun. It was a good movie.
Nice. Yeah, I'm excited to see it. We'll see it at some point. Did you want to talk about, just for a second, just because I want to, the JoJo Bizarre Adventure demo that you played?
Oh, yeah.
The fighting game?
There was something else I wanted to talk about. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle R, I think is what it's called. Yeah, that went on sale for $15 this week, and I didn't buy it, but I downloaded the demo. There's a demo, which I think is a new demo. I don't think it was out before, because I certainly
I don't remember there being one, but I don't know. I actually just checked the price and the sale price is gone now, as of when we're talking.
Okay, yeah, sale's over,
which sucks. But I do want to try out the demo at some point.
The demo is great. Now, my history with JoJo begins on the Dreamcast. I didn't watch the anime or anything, but when the Dreamcast came out, one thing that I was starving for was anime games, because during the N64 era, all these cool anime games would come out on PS1 with the anime cutscenes, and I thought that was like, I was jealous. I wanted to see more of that. And so I got my Dreamcast, and here comes this JoJo's Bizarre Adventure game, which had, it was anime, and it was, wild and crazy anime that I liked, just off-the-wall humor and strange things like you throw cards at people, and like, yeah, I'm in on that. Let me get that. So even though I'm not a big fighting game guy, I bought that game, and I enjoyed the anime and the bizarre humor and the off-the-wall kind of stuff. And so I was primed to like this game when this game was announced. And the game not only, just intrigued me on its own, the reviews have been really positive on this game too. And so I always had my eye on it. I put it on the wish list ever since it came out, but it was just, $60. And again, I'm not really a fighting game guy, so I didn't want to buy in at $60. But I'm glad that they put out a demo finally, because the demo is really enjoyable. And it's the kind of fighting game where you can, I know that there's skill to it. So I don't want to say that you can just mash buttons, but if you mash buttons, you will do cool things. You will see not cutscenes, but whatever you call it in a fighting game where you do a cool move and, some cinematic thing happens. Mm-hmm. And you'll just kind of, some of them kind of knocked my socks off, like just the dynamic camera angles and, there's a lot going on, just with a few button presses, you can do something really impressive and satisfying. There's a whole lot of personality to this game, which from what I've seen of the newest JoJo series that this is based on, it seems like it's translated that game, that show's personality really, really well, to where it just feels like you're playing the show. And it's got a really unique style, yeah.
Is it like most fighting game demos where they basically let you play as like one or two characters and you can play like one match or it's like, how would you do a fighting game demo? From what I always think of is, if you remember like the Soul Calibur 2 demo that was like on a GameCube disc or something,
yep,
where you get to play as like two characters and you get to play like a match or two or something like that. And that's kind of how is it similar to that?
There's a selection of, I think there's five characters.
Oh, okay.
And the interesting thing about this game, which I guess is not unique, there's a tag team system. So you actually select two characters. You have your main character and then your support character that you can call in. So you can select from five characters, yeah.
Okay, cool. I definitely want to give it a look at some point.
In addition to the tag team thing, each character has their, I think they call it their stand, which was true in the Dreamcast game as well, where you have kind of like this ghost that helps you out. So you can call in your stand. So really you can select three characters in one, essentially.
Oh, so it's kind of like Mortal Kombat 1 with your cameo characters, where you can have other characters come in and assist you. I mean, that's not really, they didn't invent that. You could do that in Marvel vs. Capcom and all that, but or even going back to like the X-Men fighting games, I think you could do that too, where you picked your guy and then you could have like an assist also that wasn't like even a character that would come in and do stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure it goes even farther back than that as far as fighting game history goes.
If I'm remembering the Dreamcast game correctly, you could have this, you could call out your stand and then you would, it was like a drone character in that game where your main character would be, wherever, stationed wherever you were when you called out the stand, but then you didn't move your main character and you actually controlled the drone character, but you needed to defend your main character, which was an interesting setup for a fighting game. That's in the original one. This one is not quite like that, or if it is, I haven't discovered how to do that, but you've got, this character that kind of pops out from within you, which is almost like an aura or something like that, that you can do with, you can do a couple special moves with. But I was intrigued enough that if it ever goes on sale again, if I'm feeling in the mood for a fighting game, I would get that. I'd pick it up.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. Just like market, and maybe it'll,
Yeah.
That'll send you an email about it or something.
it felt to me like a somewhere between a traditional fighting game and Smash Brothers in the way that it feels like you can pick up and play it, and it's not as intimidating as some other fighting games might be. But if you do feel the need to go in deep and learn all the moves, then you can actually get quite complex with it, if you will.
I was wondering, because I watched your video just now, the one on Slack, and I was curious because, you know, some of the new fighting games, they make it where if you're button mashing, it'll kind of like finish the combo for you. Like there's options that you can do that. Like I know, what was it? The Persona fighting game that's on Switch, Persona Arena, which is actually really cool. I bought that, and yet you can set it to where it'll kind of just like, you can make it sort of like an easy mode where if you start a combo, it'll kind of finish it if you just keep button mashing. But it also kind of helps you to learn how to play fighting games, like similar to like what Street Fighter VI did, where they made like a Smash Brothers type way of playing where you can press like, you know, a button and forward and it'll do a Hadouken or whatever. And people actually were able to learn how to play fighting games in that way. So I'm wondering if it has that sort of thing, because that seems to be a new thing to do, where it kind of just will finish the combo for you if you're just pressing buttons.
I didn't see that, but now that you mentioned it, that is something that I think it was probably needed in every fighting game, like more tutorials rather than just like looking up the menus to learn your moves. Like people like me, you know, you don't really want to do that. I don't want to spend my whole time playing a game in a menu, memorizing moves as if I was like learning how to play a song on the guitar or something like that. I don't want to do that. I want to like play the game in order to play the game. So please, in fighting games, put in more actual tutorials and, you know, allow me, maybe not so much a tutorial, but like allow me to play the game in a mode where it will prompt me at certain points. Hey, like you could, like I imagine a fighting game where you're caught in a certain scenario where you're about to be hit, and then it pops up like, here are your options from here. Game slows to a pause. Here's what you could do. You could do this to dodge, blah, blah, blah. You do that to counterattack, blah, blah, blah. And just let me play a fighting game in that mode where it pauses at different inflection points where you can, and then it throws out three different options for moves I could do from here, and here's how to do them. I think that'd be cool. And it would bring more people into the genre.
I mean, they kind of do that for some games, like through tutorials and all that. Like some fighting games have really, really good tutorials where they do like, they're like, all right, well, so, you know, this is how you dodge, or this is how you do this. I know like Mortal Kombat 1 had a lot of really good stuff, and Street Fighter 6 as well, you know, had really, really good tutorials that actually like, that you have to do, you know, if you play through all of them, it'll actually teach you how to do stuff and all that. But it would be cool if you could incorporate it into like the single player and all that. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I think
everybody should give this a try. Even if you're like a casual, sometimes fighting game fan like me, yeah, JoJo, now that there's a demo, give it a try. It's a lot of fun.
For sure. Yeah, I'll give it a try at some point. I know there's like five seasons of JoJo on Netflix as well. Like I've heard people talking. I've never watched the show, but I think it'd be worth it.
Yeah, I'd like to watch that show. It's intrigued me ever since the Dreamcast game. And I know that it's a show going back to the 90s, I believe, or late 80s.
Yeah, from what I found, I guess originally it started in 93. And the stuff that's on Netflix is separate from that. But from my understanding, each JoJo season is a different character and a different story, so you don't need to like go all the way back to the beginning, because they're different JoJo. They're different JoJos, I guess. It's what they say. Okay. It's a different person every time.
Like Doctor Who or something.
I guess, kind of. Yeah. I mean, don't quote me on that. I don't really know anything about it. All I know is that they say like, oh, this is the new JoJo, you know. So that's kind of restarts it or whatever. So yeah, there was one.
The series from the 90s has Charles Martinet in it. So there's that.
You mean in the English version? The wrong version?
Yep.
The dubbed version?
Yep, the wrong version.
Yeah.
Yep.
There was one thing I did want to mention. I guess I didn't, speaking of sales, I just wanted to, you know, after playing Princess Peach and you know, being like thinking about Miss Cleninja and all that, I'm planning on buying that Bakaru game eventually, the Japanese only Good Feel Miss Cleninja, you know, spiritual successor that's on the Switch Japanese eShop. It ended up being a lot cheaper than I thought. Originally, I thought it was $50 just because of how I know changing yen to U.S. money, but yen has actually dropped in its value recently. So what looks like $50 is actually $30. It's much less now. So like normally my thing is like what 10,000 equals like. So if you see something that says like 50,000 yen, that means $50. But I guess it's different now. Now it's like 50,000 means like 30. So I was like, oh shit. So I marked it, and I get emails from my Japanese e-shop, and hopefully eventually goes on sale, and I'll end up buying it. Either that,
now's a good time to,
or maybe I'll get it for 30.
Japanese vacation.
Yeah, but it was fun. It was fun for what it was. But yeah, why don't we take a quick break, because we're about to get kicked off in another 5 minutes anyway, and then we'll just run through the news, sure. And then we'll be done.
Hey, you.
It's me, Mario.
Yeah, you. Subscribe to our Patreon to hear our bonus shows, which happen every month.
I'm tired.
Tired of all the big corporate podcasts spoon-feeding you the same old video game news on every single show.
Ah, spaghetti. Ah, ravioli.
Then expand!
With Nintendo Main Expansion Pack.
It's us talking about old games that were important to us. It's us interviewing people that we meet at conventions. And heck, it's live shows from those same conventions. It's basically everything you could want that Nintendo Main ever made.
Here we go!
And it's just a buck a month.
That's less than a bad indie on the eShop.
It's $12 a year, which is less than Nintendo Switch Online.
Thank you so much for subscribing to our Patreon and supporting Nintendo Main.
Just go to patreon.com/NintendoMainPodcast and, hey, Mario, let go!
Whoa. 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 Whoa.
Whoa. He's throwing us back to the show!
So long, Bowser!
Ah! Patreon.com/NintendoMainPodcast!
Game over!
Let's talk about the news.
News, 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 news. Don't snooze or you miss the news.
Not a whole lot of news happening. We're still kind of in between. But there's something out there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Suika game sold over 8 million copies. So that's pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah. Suika game. I forgot that's a game that I have that I haven't played because I just haven't played it recently because it's incredibly addictive. But yeah, I'd recommend getting it. It's fun. We got some releases this week. We're still getting games on the Switch, even though everybody wants a Switch too. South Park Snow Day came out for $29.99. I watched some of the reviews of it. IGN gave it like a 3 out of 10.
Weren't
too impressed with it. I think Switch Up was a little bit nicer. They gave it like 66% or something like that. I don't know. I was never really interested in this game, but it's a multiplayer online whatever. Game, it's out now.
Down because you know the other two were reviewed pretty well. I thought there was those like 7 or 8s. People seem to enjoy those.
Yeah, I played the Stick of Truth and it was really good from what it was, you know. Mm-hmm. And Fractured Butthole was supposed to be just as good, if not. I'd say Stick of Truth was probably like a 9 for a lot of people, but But it's weird that they. I mean, I guess those were like our, you know, lighthearted RPGs, and this is like not. It's a different. I don't know. Like I said, this one never really looked that good to me. I was just kind of like, okay, well, there's that. I guess.
I thought it was kind of positioned as the grand finale of this modern South Park trilogy. So it's all the more disappointing that it's reviewed poorly.
Yeah, I guess it. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's nothing like the other two. But anyway, yeah, it's out. It's $30. There's like a bundle version that's like $60 or whatever. I don't know. Don't bother with it, from what I heard.
You get all of them.
There's a Shockman collection. I was just found this interesting just because it's like a Japanese side scroller that I just never heard of that's out now.
Yeah, what's Shockman? I don't know.
It's a Super Famicom type stuff and you know, action anime looking game. So I like that stuff. It's like $11. Okay. It's on sale for $8.79 till the 15th of April. So cool.
Mega Man villain got his own spinoff.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they have swords. They have like swords that they're cutting people up with, which is cool. But yeah, no, it looks interesting just because of the Famicom anime stuff. This one I've stuck out to me because it's called a Heibereke Enjoy Edition, and I'm like, this game looks a lot like Euphoria. What's up with this? Did somebody just like steal the art style and just make their own version of it? No, it is Euphoria actually, and that's what it's called in Japanese. Yep. And this just seems like a really confusing choice for me here for Sunsoft. Like, shouldn't you just call it Euphoria since you just came out with Euphoria 2? Shouldn't it be the same name so you could try to maybe sell it? But yeah, there's a version of the Famicom version of Euphoria that's available on Switch now. If you want to get the first one before you play the second one, or you played the second one and you want to do the first one, it's here and it's cheap. It's $10, $8.99 on sale right now.
It's confusing, because... Well, obviously, that's the Japanese name, but they didn't bother changing it to Euphoria for here. But also, the confusing then would be that they called it. I mean, I wonder, did they call the new Euphoria? Or did they call it Heibereke 2 in Japan?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, well, I mean, it would be in Japanese, so I wouldn't be able to read it. But it's just weird. Like, yeah, why would you, especially since you just came out with, you know, the new Euphoria? Why don't you just call it Euphoria? Because I was really confused. I thought it was a game that was just an indie game that was just aping the style or whatever. But it's the same thing. Like if you look in the description, it says like Sunsoft game that was released in 1991 or whatever. You know, like it is the game. So if you never got to play Euphoria, the original one, I know you love the Sunsoft games. Here it is. It's coming out this week for Switch. I might give it a try. It's a better price than Felix the Cat is, which is also coming out this week for $25.
$24.99.
It's got I guess there's three different versions in there. You got the NES Felix the Cat. There's a Famicom version, and there's also a Game Boy version. I don't know anything about Felix the Cat, but I
know that it's a. So I think this is what happened with this game. This is a rare NES game that goes for like $300.
Oh, okay.
I heard it was pretty good, but. I think they've missed the mark on this re-release. Like, if you're going to re-release this game, certainly they're looking at the price of the NES game going, wow, people really want to play this game. It's $300, whatever. Let's put out a special edition, whatever. One, Felix the Cat is not the hot IP that it used to be, if it ever was. And two, like, if you're trying to piggyback on the curiosity of people who might say, hey, why is that game $300? It might be good. $25 is too high a price. You got to go for that magic 15 at the max. That's kind of the throwaway. Hey, I'll give it a try. Sure, whatever. I don't think this is going to do well at $25.
And it is a limited run thing, though, right? I mean, you can buy physical versions of it through limited run and all that. So I don't know. So. Yeah, it's I don't really know. I don't know anything about Felix the Cat, but sure.
It's no Garfield.
Yeah, it's up there. I just wanted to mention. I don't know. It's an interesting looking game, worth mentioning. Let's see what else. Pepper Grinder. Pepper Grinder is actually coming out this weekend for $14.99. Speaking of the magic price, $14.99 is a great price. Maybe I'll end up getting that. Yeah. I remember Jeremy really liked the demo. I never got around to playing the demo. I should try it and see what it's like.
You should. It's fun. It's kind of like what I was saying about Ori just has like fluid controls and, you know, fun to fun to grind through the levels. Badum-ching.
Pun intended.
Yep. I'm interested in this one just because I'm fans of these guys. Mega 64 is making a game that's just coming out this week, actually, on the 31st, of one of their skits from 13 years ago. It's Doug Huggum, parody of Duke Nukem.
I never saw that one. I mean, I watched a lot of their stuff. I wish they need to make a game of Magic City Man. That was one of my favorite videos that they did. I want that.
I don't remember that one.
The open world. It was basically it was basically making fun of Infamous and like those type of games. Oh. And it's just like it's Magic City Man. It's just a guy who's magic in an open world setting, and you can go around and do superpower stuff. And it has a line where it's like, it says like super urban, says Kyle Urban or something like that. It was it was funny, but yeah, if they were gonna make a game, I want Magic City Man. I want that game because that'd be fun. I enjoyed Infamous. Magic City Man, I'm sure, is gonna be a good game. But I never saw this Huggum game, and this seems like a joke just looking at it because it's like oh, we said it's coming out in March. We got like 3 more days. Let's put it out. You know, it's like I was like, this doesn't seem real. And what is this even coming out for? What, Steam? Like, I don't know. I don't even see any. Yeah.
It doesn't say what it's coming out for, but I'm going to go ahead and assume it's coming out for Switch because it just seems like it. We'll know in a couple days anyway. So
it seems so fake. Where it's like the announcement was like a couple days ago, and it's like, oh yeah, no, well, it'll come out. Sure, I promise. I'm like, yeah, right.
They say, in a sketch we made over 13 years ago, we made a promise, and while many assumed we had forgotten, that couldn't be further from the truth. Mega 64 is finally releasing their first video game ever, Doug Huggum. And it's coming out exactly when we said it would release all those years ago, March 2024. This game will take you to a place no modern title dares to go, a place of unfiltered compassion. This is a first-person adventure that reshapes the shooter into the sharer, a thriller that finds bravery and kindness, reward and benevolence, and shows us all how to reach for our manners before our pulse rifles. Look forward to playing Doug Huggum on March 31st, 2024.
I'll play a first-person hugger or something if it comes to Switch, maybe. I don't know. I don't know anything about the video or this game, but I'm intrigued, I guess.
Yeah, I've watched probably most of their stuff, so I feel like I should give a little back and get this game.
Yeah, I used to watch a lot of it. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in like 20 years, but I'm sure it's out there in some capacity. The last video I saw was when they made fun of Nintendo's awful E3 where their big showcase was Wii Sports Resort or something like that. That's the last thing I saw was when they made fun of whatever year that was where everybody was like, Nintendo betrayed us because they're all casual now or whatever. Everybody was all pissed about the one where they did I think Wii Sports Resort was there, and I think it was also like Wii Music was part of the presentation as well. Like they, you know, the one that kind of wasn't great. That was the last time I saw them do anything. But something I'm excited about, the Game Boy Advance app is getting one new game this weekend also, and that game is F-Zero Maximum Velocity. If you ever wanted to know what that Game Boy Advance F-Zero game was, here it is. You can play it. It's I don't know. It's fine. I remember buying a Game Boy Advance, being really excited to play this game, and it wasn't as good as I thought. I thought it was going to be like this. It is like the Super Nintendo, but it's not. It doesn't have that. The levels don't have the charm of the original Super Nintendo one. But I'll give it a play again, you know, just because I love F-Zero games. And hopefully now that this is on here, they can add F-Zero GP Legend, which was based on the F-Zero anime. And also F-Zero Climax, the one that didn't come out here, which was actually the last F-Zero game that came out before we got F-Zero 99, which is also getting an update. F-Zero 99 is getting some mirror modes and some extra shit like that. So I haven't played it in a while, but I always love going back to it and getting my ass kicked. So I will. Maybe it's time for me to do some more 99. I'm glad that it still exists, and I'm glad that they're still supporting it. And with seeing the Maximum Velocity going to Game Boy Advance, maybe we'll get some of those tracks in 99 eventually. I figured that would be that would be what would make sense, like to add to 99. It's just put some of the Game Boy Advance levels on there as well, or, you know,
sure,
tracks, because it's kind of the same, you know, it's kind of the same style. You can easily pop it in there. So
I'm very, very happy for you that you're getting your proof that Nintendo has not forgotten F-Zero. So maybe there is still hope that F-Zero GameCube game can come out eventually.
I would love to see that. I mean, there's a. I was watching a video the other day. I don't even remember what it was. But there's been, you know, there's a lot of people. Apparently, there's rumors saying that there's an April Nintendo Direct, like an official one, coming around the corner. Which, sure, that'd be great. But and I just saw people talking about, you know, what if there is a Direct, and what if they talk about, like, you know, Paper Mario Thousand Year Door and Luigi's Mansion 2, which they probably will. But what if they drop, like, more GameCube games, like Luigi's Mansion 1 in there, or, you know, or Metroid Prime 2, obviously, is the one that I figure would happen eventually. But, yeah, put some more GameCube stuff in there and put F-Zero GX eventually on Switch in some way. So we can all play it and get our asses handed to us, because it's a really hard-ass game. But it was fun. So, yeah.
That's, we got a system update to version 18.0.0. Lots of thrilling inclusions, like...
there's sleep mode. That's about the only thing...
Sleep to 15 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, you can sleep. You can sleep mode it now. That's the only thing I saw that was, like, different, I guess.
You could always sleep mode it, but you could extend it to... Go to sleep after 15 minutes now.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. For those 15-minute increments when you're like your kids, you get 15 minutes of whatever, and then you got to go to sleep.
Now, I thought there was an unspoken rule that said when you upgrade to a 0.0 version, it has to be something significant. Nintendo has broken this rule time and time again to where I no longer get excited for the 0.0 updates.
Yeah, I really don't. We rarely mention them, really, because it's just like I forget that they've even happened. I did mention it on our wrestle stream because just as a joke, because, you know, we still have a hard time getting online on AEW, and I was like, and even after the stability update, it should be more stable, but it didn't. It has not helped AEW Fight Forever at all. Watch our videos, youtube.com/NintendoMadePodcast. We're funny. Yeah. Anyway.
We had some rumors. This is an interesting one. There's a rumor that Xbox is making a handheld.
I actually heard this a couple weeks ago. It came off of some, I don't know. So it wasn't like a live stream thing, but they talked to somebody on a podcast or something like this. This was mentioned like a month ago, even, that they might have a handheld. I guess there's more happening with that. Like somebody else dug something out or heard something from a mailman and called it news.
So this is IGN reporting from about an interview with Polygon. In this Polygon interview, they're interviewing Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox. And so this IGN's saying, Microsoft's heavily rumored to be preparing to release an official Xbox handheld. While he stopped short of announcing it in a new interview, Xbox boss Phil Spencer went as far to say as what he wants from it. He discussed various existing PC gaming handhelds, read that as the Steam Deck, listing everything that he would add to the experience of using them to make them feel like an Xbox. This includes having access to all of your games with associated save files, being able to boot into the Xbox at full screen, but in a compact mode, and having all the social experiences normally found on Xbox. Now, this is him talking directly, saying, like, I want to feel like the dash of my Xbox when I turn on the television, except I want it on those devices. And so he kind of danced around the existence of an Xbox handheld throughout the interview. He confirmed that the Xbox hardware team is considering, quote, different hardware form factors and things they could do. I'm confused because I thought Xbox was about being platform agnostic now. Like, they were abandoning hardware and going to the cloud, and yet here's this rumor that they're making a handheld device.
I mean, I feel like everybody has a rumor. I mean, there's a rumor that PlayStation's making a handheld device, too. I mean, I don't know.
Well, they did. They made that thing, the...
No, a real handheld device. The PlayStation Portal is basically a backbone, but you can't do as much things. I mean, it's not... Yeah. It's just a remote play thing. So, and it apparently doesn't work very good. But, I mean... There was another one that they were making, like an actual handheld that could play without owning a PS5 or whatever.
I guess maybe the Xbox thing does kind of make more sense because, of course, Microsoft is into computers, but they never actually made a Microsoft computer before, have they? I mean, web TV, I guess, way back when. But I don't know. It's just all it all seems to me to be not very thought out if it's true. Like, why not just advertise, hey, you can play Xbox games on the Steam Deck? That seems to be going with their broader strategy of cloud stuff.
With their like Game Pass and all that, if you're smart enough, you can get that to work on your iPhone. You know, I've seen there's ways. I wasn't willing to throw $15 at it to see whether it worked or not, but I mean, I've seen videos apparently where it does, where you can use that stuff on pretty much anything. So I don't know, but you know, PlayStation made the PlayStation Portal, and you could already do that on an iPhone too. But you know, people do all sorts of dumb shit. Anyway, yeah, my interest in Xbox stuff is pretty low, so they can make a handheld if they want, and maybe it'll help them out.
I think it would just be the Duke controller, but that big logo in the middle would just be the screen.
Yeah, I'm sure nobody wants to use that controller ever again. They've kind of like, I don't know, feel like they don't talk about it anymore. Sonic Heroes remake possibly in development for Switch 2. This is such a weird, random thing. Like, okay, what is that? Like another this person said it on a podcast sort of news article here.
Yeah, I didn't dig into it too far. I mean, they've remade Colors.
Yeah, but I mean,
they've remade a couple other Sonic games, right?
It's kind of funny to say that it would be on Switch 2 because Sonic Heroes was a GameCube game. It's like we could easily put it on there. But I guess, you know, there have been a lot of GameCube remakes on Switch that don't run as well as they did on GameCube. So maybe you can actually make it run at 60 frames per second this time. You know, there were a bunch of GameCube games, like including like the Botan Kaitos collection, doesn't run as well as it did on GameCube. Same with like Tales of Symphonia and a lot of other stuff that was. I don't think that Thousand Year Door even runs as well on GameCube as it will on Switch. Like frame rate wise. It was a 60 frame rate game. It was a 60 FPS game when it came out on GameCube, and it's only 30 for Switch. So,
if you're gonna remake a Sonic game, you know, I guess that one's pretty well regarded. But remake one that went a little bit out of the box, and I think succeeded to some degree. Sonic and the Secret Rings, like, that'd be cool to see in the modern era. It had some interesting ideas where it controlled more like a racing game. It was almost like Sonic was a car. It was like a combo between a racing game and a platformer, and I think it was done pretty well. Yeah, there was some problems with it, but that's why you'd want to do a remake. I think that game had an interesting design choice that was never followed up upon.
I mean, they had two sequels, quote unquote, but they weren't quite the same. Yeah, because they had the Black Knight and the Werehog one, which were technically sequels to Sonic and the Secret Rings, but it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't the same. Maybe they're working up.
Secret Rings is an odd man out in the series. There's no other game quite like. I mean, maybe you could argue Sonic R because that was a racing game, but it just felt like a driving game with Sonic, and you could jump and do homing attacks and stuff. And I thought it was pretty cool, but I think you could make an interesting remake out of that one. So I challenge you, Sega.
I mean, maybe they're working up to that chronologically, because Sonic Heroes did come out before that game, so maybe they'll get to it eventually. But I do have Sonic Heroes on GameCube, and it was a good game from what I played of it, so, I mean, it's not a bad one. Why not put it on there, I guess? Add it to the pile of Sonic stuff. Why not?
Here's one more for the pile of Sonic stuff. There's a leaked trailer for a new Sonic mobile game. So this is happening. It's a trailer that's out there, and you can see it, and Nintendo Life says it looks a lot like Fall Guys.
People are saying that this might go to Switch 2 also. Like, I've also seen rumors about that. That the new Sonic game is destined for Switch 2 as well. So, this one, the Fall Guys one. So, I don't know. Maybe some Sonic person is just leaking Switch 2 stuff, I guess. Maybe.
Yeah, it's called Sonic Toys Party.
It's such a weird name. I don't know. I didn't like Fall Guys. I don't think Sonic's gonna turn me into a Fall Guys fan or anything like that. But Switch 2 stuff, that would be cool. What was it? Another supposed leaker or whatever podcast person that mentioned a thing, says that new Virtual Fighter and Streets of Rage. I mean, aren't these kind of going with the Super Games or whatever that Sega said they were doing?
Yeah, these. I know at least Streets of Rage was announced. I don't remember if Virtual, I think it was, but they're given more details. This is a guy called, a person called Midori, who has an excellent track record. I'm reading this article from My Nintendo News. has an excellent track record when it comes to leaks. They've talked a little bit more about the upcoming Streets of Rage and Virtua Fighter games. The newly revamped Streets of Rage is currently being developed by Komi Games, who previously worked on Mighty Fight Federation, and then Midori also revealed that a new Virtua Fighter game will be unveiled this year. So maybe it wasn't previously announced.
Well, not any new Virtua Fighter, as far as I know.
So that was the news, I guess, that the Midori revealed that the Komi Games is developing the game. That's the news about that. And then the Virtua Fighter is breaking news, I guess.
Breaking news.
Yep.
Well,
that's cool.
Sure. Speaking of other breaking news, this came from like PAX East, I think, but Shadow of the Damned Hella remastered. This is a Grasshopper game. One of, you know, the people who did Killer 7 and No More Heroes.
No More Heroes.
I'm interested in this, obviously, because I always kind of wanted to play it, and I never played it. I mean, this one and Lollipop Cheerleader, or whatever the fuck it was called, Lollipop Chainsaw.
Chainsaw.
They both kind of got, like, you know, I don't know, sort of like 7 reviews or whatever, so I didn't really, like, run out to get it. But if it's a, I don't know, if it's like $20, I'd give it a look on Switch.
Or PS3 era, is that right?
I think it's a PS3 game, yeah. So so it can feel like a PS3 ass game, like a Ghostbusters. I'm sure it's. I mean, it's a, like I said, it's a Suda game, so it's going to be weird. They're always weird in their own way. But hopefully, it's better than that one. No More Heroes that I didn't like, the indie one.
We got some release dates. Grounded is coming on April 16th.
It's on sale too. It's 20% off right now. So
how much is it?
If anybody's interested in it. I don't think it's very expensive. I thought it was maybe 20 something, but I might be wrong.
And then Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance is moving up 1 week. Now it's coming out on June 14th.
It's coming out early because it doesn't want to release at the same time as the Elden Ring DLC, is what
Smart.
I heard. So that's why they changed their time, which is funny.
Interesting that 1 week can make such a difference.
Yeah, if they come out early, then everyone will buy that instead of Elden Ring's DLC. I mean, if it was just DLC, I'd get it, but it's not. So it's all another game, and I'm not ready to do that. Grounded is on sale right now for $31.99, marked down from $39.99. So it's $30 instead of $40.
That's pretty big discount.
So it's $10 off, and it's on sale until it comes out on the 16th. So there you go.
That's a good incentive.
I never really got some time. They do that a lot for stuff where they do the release sales. I see a lot of them on there, and it kind of makes you want to, like, especially if it's like a $10 like that. If you really want to play it, it's like, well, maybe you should get it. Otherwise, you have to pay $10 more. You know.
I never consider the ones that are like, you know, $4 off or whatever. You know, the cheap ones. Like, if you're gonna do a pre-sale incentive, make it significant. Like $9-$10. That's enough to make me consider doing it.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm still curious about that. I mean, we'll see about reviews and stuff.
I think the premise is strong. You know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids video game. Cool. All right. Article on Nintendo Life is detailing every upcoming Switch game for 2024. Any surprises in here?
What was that? That's an IGN article, actually. It's not Nintendo Life.
That was IGN.
Yeah. I looked through it, and my only complaint is, where the fuck is Ease 10, guys? I know that you hate Ease, and you never talk about it ever on any of your podcasts, but Ease 10 is a 2024 game. There was a trailer that said that it was coming out in 2024, so that's my big release of 2024. It's not even on your list. Thus, your list is awful. That's what we say. It's not a good list. No, I mean, it's just, it was kind of just stuff I already knew about. But leaving Ease 10 out. Not fair. Not fair, guys. Pay attention. Do better.
Yeah, put Ease in there, you know. But I don't know if there's any real surprises in here besides the usual stuff, the stuff that we all are well aware of, Luigi's Mansion 2, et cetera, et cetera. One that I might consider, Ace Combat 7. I always like, you know, flying games and flying combat games. I just don't have a lot of them. I might consider that. I've heard that's a good series, Ace Combat 7. Especially if it leans more arcadey, which I like the arcadey kind of stuff versus the sim stuff. Other than that, I don't really see anything that stands out to me. Well, Professor Layton, yeah, maybe that one.
I guess the most interesting one is like the one that's farthest in the future. It's like Fantasy Life I, it's October. You know, like, aside from that, there's nothing really past June as far as Nintendo stuff goes. So it's like, that's also makes me think that maybe there's a direct happening sometime that's going to be like, here's what the rest of the year looks like, because it's kind of like, we don't really know. There's got to be something hidden there. Maybe a Metroid Prime 4 or something. I mean, I wouldn't put money on it, but I'd love to see it. Definitely be my game of the year if it ended up happening.
It's coming for Switch 3.
It's coming for Switch 4, actually. That's what that's what they really meant by the 4.
Nintendo Life, this is actually from Nintendo Life now, has an article. 33 games were surprised still aren't on Switch.
This kind of feels like every episode we talk about games, that every time there's a game
that
we played from the past that isn't on Switch, we're like, why is that not on Switch? We just did it this time when I talked about the Mystical Ninja games. There's stuff that's not on Switch. It seems kind of like stuff that's been covered already. Like I said, Luigi's Mansion could be a Shadow Drop thing, possibly for a possible direct, whatever it happened. Xenoblade Chronicles X, obviously, yeah, that's a big one. Mother 3 is already on there. I don't know. It's kind
of sort of
that,
a blanket category they put in here. Dreamcast games. Yeah, why not have a Dreamcast NSO channel? Like, just do it. It would be amazing.
I'm curious. Well, we already have the Sega Genesis channel, which was like, I guess, kind of ho-hum to people. But what they should do is systems that people can't get that are really hard to get. Like, how about a fucking Sega Saturn
terrible
channel?
Graphics.
No, I want a Sega Saturn channel. That's expensive. That system's expensive as fuck. Like, I mean, or like, you know, there was a Sega CD Mini that they did. How about a Sega CD channel? Like, add that on there to the NSO. Like, that'd be great. I mean, TurboGrafx would be cool, too, because then I could finally play Ease 1 and 2 in English. But, add more Sega stuff. There's a bunch of Sega systems. There's three of them, at least, that aren't on there. So put them on here before you get to Dreamcast.
I
want a Saturn channel and a CD channel.
I wish they would fulfill the promise of the Wii channels, which, remember when they first came out with the Sega channel and then the TurboGrafx channel, we were like, oh my god, if they're going to do a TurboGrafx channel on the Wii, like, what are they going to do? That was sort of my thought at the time. Like, are we going to get an Amiga CD channel or all the random shit?
I mean, they did,
like,
put
all that.
They did put Commodore 64 games on there. That was pretty, that's pretty out there for the Wii Virtual Console. That kind of blew me away that anybody would care about those. But yeah, I mean, there is still like some that you're like, oh my god, that's still not on there, where it's like
Super Mario Land.
Yeah. It's like, what? Why is it not there? And I would love to see, like, you know, I'm sure Diddy Kong Racing will be here eventually. They've already been, I mean, they've been doing the Rare stuff. They'll save it for a direct or something. We have 10 minutes left in the Zoom, so let's try to wrap it up before we have to start it again. So whatever you got left
showcase
to do, let's just talk about
the Future Games Showcase, the Spring Showcase. So if you want a slew of indie titles, check out what was announced there. There's one that looked pretty cool at the top. It's called, Void Rot, which I think it looked kind of like a Metroidvania, but just had a cool style.
There was one thing that stuck out to me, probably because we already know about it, but Holsten, which was actually, we had sent an email from the company who did it, and Holsten was one that I was really intrigued by. I still am, so it's cool that it's on here, so maybe that means that it'll eventually come out, because I did really want to play that game. Maybe we'll get codes, even if we don't, I'll still buy it, because I think it looks really dope. But aside from that, there wasn't really a whole lot that stuck out to me, I guess. Tales of Iron 2, Whiskers of Winter, I'd already seen that one before, but it still doesn't have a release date, I guess.
The Zelda movie director came out and he reassured fans that he wants to fulfill their greatest desires.
That's a pretty lofty thing there. Like, it's, no, I swear, whatever we'll do will be exactly what you want. Like, that's impossible. That's like saying, oh, you know, my next album will be the best album of all time. Like, it's like, sure, that doesn't mean anything. It's like, what? It's like, maybe, maybe I want like a super bloody Zelda game or Zelda movie, or maybe I want it to be done by somebody other than you. You can't make that happen. That's not going to make my dreams come true.
You're going to hand the reins over to Studio Ghibli? Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, give it to somebody else.
I'm curious to see his new movie that's come, the Planet of the Apes movie, which I haven't seen any of those modern Planet of the Apes movies, but I think I will go see this one.
I saw the first one. It was pretty good. like the first new one. I've actually seen all of the original ones. The third one of the original ones is badass. That's the best one. The one where they go back in time to the 80s. It's great. If you can find it somewhere, watch it.
What's that called?
It's called Escape from the Planet of the Apes, I think, is the third one. Mm. But I watched, there's like five of them, but that was my... The weird thing about Planet of the Apes is it goes in a circle. So the first Planet of the Apes is the future, and the second Planet of the Apes, they blow up that planet, and they go back in time to the 80s in the third one, and then it starts... So the fifth one ends at the beginning of the first one. So it's a circle. The original movies, which is pretty cool. And I like those ape costumes much better than the CGI stuff. But whatever, that's a different thing. But part three was awesome. I stand by that movie. I think I have it on DVD even. It's the only one that I own. It's the third one because it's great.
So this person, Wes Ball, the director, he did say that he wanted the film to feel a bit like a live-action Miyazaki movie, so that gives me hope that he has at least that in his mind. And I've never seen any of his movies, so I guess I can't really have a opinion on him as a filmmaker or as a choice for this movie. So I don't know. I think I want to go see the Planet of the Apes movie for that reason, just to see what the Zelda movie might be like. Yeah. So that's that. And that movie's coming out, when, 2025, I think? We got a little ways to live.
I think
we can see the results of that.
I was going to say, I thought it was later than that. Is it next year or is it the year after? I don't even know.
I don't know.
I thought it would be 2026 maybe even, if they haven't even shot it yet. You know, you could probably watch Maze Runner for much cheaper somewhere, and you don't actually have to go to the theater and see what that's
like. I had zero interest in those movies. I mean, those movies were like the also ran to the Hunger Games, which I don't like the Hunger Games because that was a knockoff of Battle Royale. And
yeah,
like, I'd just rather watch Battle Royale. So the whole like young adult apocalyptic whatever craze movement, etc. I just completely was disinterested in that, and so that's the source of my negative feeling toward him as a choice for the Zelda movie. But I didn't see those movies. Maybe they were good. I mean, they made three of them, right? So somebody liked them. We'll see.
I mean, they made like
a Sims movie coming from Margot Robbie.
They made like five Hunger Games movies and one recently just last year, so I mean people like Margot Robbie Sims movie. Okay. Sure, maybe, I don't know, why not?
I mean, we would have said the same hearing about the Barbie movie with the announcement of the Barbie movie.
Yeah, but Margot Robbie was just in the Barbie movie. Like, that movie was made by Greta Gerwig, who's like awesome, who's done like a lot of very, very good movies in the past.
It too, though.
I'm just saying, for the Barbie movie was the director, which in the end, that movie was kind of whatever to me. But I mean, that was more of a Greta Gerwig thing. I mean, sure, get her on to direct it, then I'll be more excited about it. But I mean, a Sims movie could be funny, I guess, if they go with that Barbie route or whatever. Just make it less confusing in the end.
I mean, the Sims is a virtual dollhouse, Barbie's dollhouse. You know, it's the same concept, you know. At least in some sense. So that only there's potential for it. It's a blank slate kind of thing. There's no character, you know, in the Sim to draw from. It's totally a blank slate. I don't know where they'll go with it. I guess they can make whatever movie they want to make, you know. And we'll see.
As long as they have a joke in there where, like, you take the toilets out and, like, have no doors and your Sims just cry all the time. They got to at least do, like, one cutaway for that. Or like what I used to do where you put...
When Sim dies.
Or like what I used to do in the Sims on GameCube, where you put your baby outside so they won't keep you awake. And then the baby people come and take it from you. They should put that in there, too. Because whenever you have... You could just take the baby carriage and put it outside the house and then the... And then they'll come and take them away from you. We have less than a minute, so let's just wrap it up right here. Because I don't, there's fine that we don't talk about anything else here. And that's been our episode 415. That's it for the news for episode 415. Thanks for listening. You can find me on the whatever it's called, the Twitter, at Nintendo_domain. At JMaxStack is Jeremy. I've seen him post some stuff about the trip on there. You can find that on there. Find us on Facebook, Nintendo Main. Go to our Patreon, patreon.com/NintendoMainPodcast, and you can hear all bonus episodes for $1. You get almost 60 plus episodes on there, or almost 60. I think it's 59 or something like that, but there's extra stuff too. On top of that, $5 and above, you get the videos early of us and WRT Radio and all that fun stuff. Check that out there. donate some money to us. We're self-funded, so it helps. Also, youtube.com/NintendoMainPodcast. You can find our other things.
Special shout out to Jeremy and Shauna listening out on the road. Enjoy your trip, guys.
Have a good time in that van. And yeah, hopefully you're having, it's not too hot or it's pretty easy to sleep in there and all that stuff. Hopefully the Badlands aren't getting to you or whatever. But yeah, we've been your hosts. I'm Trey Johnson.
John Litter.
And thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
Innocence is lost at a time when the world needs salvation. In a place where Infamous and Prototype honestly look exactly the same, comes a third option. Magic City Man. Another urban-looking man in an urban-looking city with weird powers. Critics are saying that Magic City Man is very urban, fits right in with the other ones. His arms can turn into stuff. Oh, he looks very urban, and this is a big city. Way urban. The cityest game I've ever played. Whether savior or villain, the people agree. He is magic. He is in a city. He is a man. He is Magic City Man. Coming soon. Also coming soon, this year's sports game, Asian Fighter and Criminals.